My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Afghanistan, climate change, and human rights are all up for discussion when the UN General Assembly meets this week. Plus, a stock sell-off in Hong Kong.
The Chinese government is kind of advancing its objectives, not always in alignment with the interests of investors.
And streaming networks win big at this year's Emmy Awards. It's Monday, September 20th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News. The top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We're exclusively reporting that a top federal safety authority said that Tesla's plans for a major upgrade of its driver assistance software might be premature. Last week, Tesla CEO Elon Musk said drivers would soon be able to request an enhanced version of what Tesla calls its full self-driving capability. Despite the name, the software doesn't make cars fully autonomous. The upgrade is expected to add a feature intended to help vehicles navigate cities. The new head of the National Transportation Safety Board said Tesla shouldn't roll out the city driving tool before addressing what the agency views as safety concerns about the company's technology. However, the NTSB does not have regulatory authority to stop it. Tesla didn't respond to requests for comment. In the past, Musk has said Tesla's advanced driver assistance features prevent crashes and make driving safer. In Texas, around 13,000 migrants, many from Haiti, have crossed the border and are now in Del Rio, according to officials in the area. All entered the U.S. illegally and are expected to try to claim asylum in the U.S. On Sunday, the first flights removing some from this new wave of migrants departed Texas for Haiti, according to a top elected official. He said Texas Department of Public Safety officers had deterred more migrants from entering the U.S. near a makeshift camp under a bridge. We'll keep you posted on WSJ.com. And streaming networks saw big success at last night's Emmy Awards. Now in its fourth season, The Crown led Netflix to its first ever win for Outstanding Drama Series. Less than 2 years after the launch of Apple TV+, the streamer seized the award for Outstanding Comedy Series thanks to Ted Lasso. We have a complete list of winners on our website. We're going to turn our focus to Asia and a steep sell-off that pulled Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index to its lowest level in almost a year. Let's look at what's behind the decline with markets editor Quinton Webb in Hong Kong this morning. Quinton, hello.
Hi there, Mark.
Quinton, first off, explain to us what happened here.
Well, so it's a familiar theme, if you like, which is that, you know, the Chinese government is kind of advancing its objectives, not always in alignment with the interests of investors. There was a report over the weekend by Reuters, the news organization, saying that some of Hong Kong's biggest property companies would need to kind of do more to serve the interests of Beijing and help solve the housing shortage in Hong Kong. And that has knocked some of the big property companies here, which are large components of the index. And then on top of that, we have this rumbling worry about Evergrande, this Chinese property giant in mainland China, which is close to the brink of collapse. And concerns about that and the kind of broader implications seem to have pulled down a whole number of stocks, including Chinese banks, insurance companies, and Evergrande itself is falling further on Monday.
And Quinton, can you give us some context? Why is the Hang Seng an important index?
Well, it's the flagship index for the Hong Kong market, and the Hong Kong market remains an important window on what international investors are thinking about China. You can nowadays invest onshore in China, in Shanghai and Shenzhen, but international participation there is a bit more limited. And in fact, actually, those markets are closed today for a holiday. So, and not just is this telling us something about what investors think locally in Hong Kong, but it is also to some extent telling us about market sentiment about Chinese stocks more broadly.
Quinton Webb, always appreciate your explanations on this. Thank you. Have a good week.
Thanks very much.
Just ahead, the United Nations General Assembly meets in New York. What will President Biden say? We'll discuss after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
The United Nations General Assembly will begin debate at its annual gathering in New York this week. The shadow of the ongoing pandemic will be apparent, with some world leaders appearing in person while others will be there virtually. While the pandemic will certainly be a big topic of discussion, that's not the only item on the agenda. For a look at what to expect in the days ahead, including a speech by President Biden, let's bring in the Journal's Will Malden. He covers the State Department and foreign policy. Will, always nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Well, let's begin by talking about President Biden. This will be his first appearance at the UN as a head of state. He's been making a case to the American people about the decision to withdraw from Afghanistan. Will he be making a similar argument to the world stage, or will we hear something different?
That's right, Mark. We expect a similar argument about the need to leave Afghanistan and move on. And don't forget, the Biden administration has billed itself as somebody that's going to reenact ties with allies that suffered in the Trump administration. But this Afghanistan decision has weighed on that a little bit. He'll probably support that decision, saying it was the right thing to do, but he'll also want to move the conversation on to things like democracy and human rights around the world.
Well, let's pick up on that, especially the topic of human rights. Obviously, that's of importance in Afghanistan and for other nations. Will President Biden lobby for the United States to have an even bigger role in taking a lead on these discussions surrounding human rights?
Definitely, Mark. Don't forget that the Trump administration pulled the U.S. out of the Human Rights Council. Now the U.S. is an observer there, which it's a U.N. agency, one of several that the Trump administration removed the U.S. from. Now the Biden administration is running anew for a seat in the Human Rights Council. So President Biden will want to make the case that the U.S. is a leader on human rights. This is something that will probably win a lot of support at the United Nations, although it could raise tensions with some other countries.
And when we're talking about those other countries, Will, I'm assuming that China would be on the list. The U.S. has been very critical about China and its human rights record. How does this play into other issues with China?
Well, that's exactly right, because the Biden administration, Secretary Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, had immediately referred to China's actions in the Xinjiang region as a genocide. Its actions to detain mostly Muslim minorities there. This has infuriated China. It echoes something the Trump administration did at the end. So there's a little bit of tit for tat in terms of human rights and tensions with China that have spilled out not just in this area, but in broader areas of democracy, as well as climate change and other UN agencies.
How will this General Assembly meeting perhaps shape the relationship between the U.S. and China then even further?
Well, we're likely to see tensions boiling out. I don't see much resolution necessarily because the divisions are so deep on so many issues. But the Biden administration does want to work with China on issues like climate change, where both countries are major polluters and emitters of carbon dioxide, of serious issues in the region and around the world, maybe even the coronavirus pandemic, although, of course, there are tensions over the origin of the pandemic. So the U.S. and China want to work together pragmatically. It's just proven difficult at a time when there's so many disagreements and so many public accusations. I don't see that being resolved, and I see those tensions kind of underlying a lot of the work at the United Nations.
Will the friction between the U.S. and China perhaps get in the way of other U.N. work?
Well, sure. One big issue is Iran and what to do with its growing nuclear program. And the permanent members of the Security Council include China, of course. They'll be sitting down. At least their secretaries of state and foreign ministers will be sitting down. And they have disagreements about what to do there. I mean, broadly, the international community wants to contain Iran's nuclear ambitions. But there are also other areas about Afghanistan and relations with the Taliban, where China sees things differently. So undoubtedly, those tensions will affect other groupings of countries as well.
And finally, Will, Obviously, the UN has many interests and positions within its membership, but there does seem to be, to an extent, some agreement on the need to combat global climate change. The U.S. has rejoined the Paris Accord under the Biden administration. Where does the discussion move from here?
That will be a very big issue, I think, at the UN General Assembly, along with, of course, COVID-19 pandemic, climate change. There are a lot of meetings scheduled. There's a major meeting set with Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Monday, involving major leaders. So that's kind of a warm up for the big climate change conference under the umbrella of the UN that's set for Glasgow, Scotland in November. Expect this to be kind of a warm up there. Of course, the issue is there are lots of disagreements about how to address climate change, with the wealthy nations being asked to pony up more money for the developing countries or the more vulnerable countries. At the same time, the US and China have disagreements over whether China should cap its emissions and when they should do so and how quickly they should start cutting carbon dioxide.
Will Malden, we'll look for your reporting this week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
And finally, malls are seeing a bounce back. According to the data analytics firm Placer AI, in July, mall traffic surpassed 2019 levels for the first time since the pandemic started. Here's our real estate reporter, Conrad Putzier.
What's driving this boost for malls is really very simple. It's vaccination rates. More people are vaccinated, which basically means they're more willing to go outside and be around others in big enclosed spaces like malls, where really over the past year, a lot of people were very hesitant to go to malls for fear of infection. Now they just feel a lot safer. And then you also have this interesting phenomenon where because people have been at home for such a long time, they really, really want to go outside and do things again and be around other people now that they feel safer. And analysts think that that gave malls a big bounce, that part of this is just a return to normalcy, but part of it is also a desire more so than ever to just be around other people and do things.
Yet there could be challenges in the months ahead. Conrad has more in his story on WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Monday. Happy to have you start the week with us. We'll be back tonight with a new podcast. Until then, stay connected with us on WSJ.com and the Journal app. I'm Mark Stewart for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.